Welcome, guys, to another episode of Essential Workers. It's been a while since we chatted, but it's interesting timing that I had a feeling like we really got to be chatting about some of these things. Like, this is an interesting time that we're in. And the subjects I was thinking of covering today are like, what is evil, evilness? How does perceptions of evil relate to feelings of victimhood and a loss of a sense of empowerment? And, you know, how much do we see things in terms of the catalytic value of everything that's occurring? Like, does the release of the Epstein files justify on some level the intensity? A lot of people would say, like, no, you can't possibly justify what Epstein did. And that's something I'm still trying to process. Like, there was a time when I was watching Epstein, like, give an interview, and it's like, oh, there's all these videos of Epstein hitting us right now. And it's like, are we meant to be forgiving Epstein? It's like, I've been taught to forgive everybody the same, love everybody the same. And so I'm faced with this challenge, like, should I even spend any time thinking about Epstein? Other people are spending enough time, but it's like, but you could extend that further. Like, you know, obviously warfare is a huge challenge that we have to face collectively. Like, we should not be, it seems obvious that we should not be killing people, but I also don't understand the depth of the corruption, the depth of the crime, the depth of the evil that is genuine and perhaps purposeful in the way in which it's catalyzing the rest of us to band around a desire to work together and collaborate more, cooperate more. Is evil a necessary thing to catalyze us to cooperate more? But ultimately, the spiritual lessons here are like, how much does this apply to us individually? And what is it that we are not able to break through in our own unforgiveness? And if we can open our hearts to everyone universally through the situations that are happening, does that empower us to become better humans, more awakened, more alive, to shine the light of the Creator, shine the love of Christ more into our reality? What are you guys' thoughts on these?
Can I ask a question?
Chris, yep, has to go first.
With your question?
Chris always goes last.
Okay. Yeah, Chris always goes last, but that's okay. I think I always go first, but that's okay too.
That's okay.
After Mike, but okay. The question is there such a thing as absolute pure evil?
Well, what is evil? Before we say what its purity is, what is it?
I would say it's metaphysical darkness, and I believe in archetypes as being darkness and light. In that sense, the existence of it is still an illusion. It's chosen as a symbol, just like in your dream, you can have a nightmare. You know you had a nightmare. There is such a thing as having a nightmare because you wake up terrified. So you know that that's a category of experience that you can have. But the purity of it might not be something we can ever absolutely appreciate.
So, like, is it like, so when I say purity, it's like in Star Wars, there's the Force. And the Force can be wielded for positive or negative things, but it comes from a source, which is an energy somewhere through all things. I don't know if it has an origin, but there's the Force. And that is always forgivable. You can always forgive the Force. But the individual, you know, at what point do we find it no longer acceptable to forgive? You know, I mean, if someone like Epstein really did, you know, or the people involved in him, around him, really did the horrible things, is it really in us to forgive? Or is that something that, like, you know, once you get to a level of godliness, you know, I mean, Jesus judges, right? And then, you know, whether or not you make it into heaven, it goes through Jesus. You know, are we capable of that level of loving all? You know, I don't know.
Well, didn't you ask for like a basic definition of what evil,
what is evil
could be? Okay, so I'm saying this. Evil, the description I feel probably encapsulates it the best. Evil is deception. So, to almost answer my own question, if there was 100% deception, it can't exist. Evil can't actually exist if it's 100% deception. It could be 99.9% deception, which is the closest thing to absolute evil as you can possibly get to. But everything usually comes because of either the lack of love or looking to find love. So if somebody is harmed, say the Epstein victims, right, at a young age, it's because of the distorted view of love or the lack of love. So when they grow up, they carry on the same types of things to their victims. Usually, people who are abused at a young age, usually,
Repeat.
if they don't get help, usually turn out to be the abusers.
Yeah,
So
they
I would
repeat
say
the.
Epstein was probably abused to do that abuse because of the love, the lack of love, or trying to find love.
Well, it's like when something gets robbed from you, like if you were raped or hurt bad or something like that, there's like something's been robbed from you, and then you spend your life trying to get that back, trying to find that perfect fit. To fill that specific puzzle piece that's missing from you. And in that desperate search, I think you just end up repeating kind of the hole that's in you.
Yeah. I do like that the love one consistently uses the term distortion, because distortion is like deception. You're distorting that which is the purified awareness, the purified understanding of something. And then the distorted perceptions of love, which obviously sexuality tends to represent. It's like there's a calling for love very often when we're opening our energy to another person, but then when there's games of control and manipulation because someone thinks that's the way to get energy from someone is to control and manipulate and twist the energy
Hold
and
them
use it.
captive.
Yeah, it's like enslavement. Enslavement is the
Well, I, you know, like giving birth and having kids, and I don't have kids, so maybe I'm not qualified to speak on this, but I think that that act is like the ultimate act because you're like finding something within that person that you want to join with somehow, and your body just kind of knows what to do. And the miracle of that is that you give birth to someone that literally is half you and half that other person. So I mean, nature is just showing us there is that duality, that connection, that energy, that primal thing within all living things. I mean, it's there by it's there at a core level, like a vibrational cellular level in your biology from the moment you're born is like your whole purpose. Just like mushrooms or anything else, the whole purpose is to reproduce and spread. Some expression of yourself everywhere,
Yeah.
But
Chris?
evil could do the same thing. There could be a source for like life and evil and goodness and all that. I don't know. What is the fabric of the universe? Is it that literal thing? Is it God's exploded and made as much of himself or itself that could exist? And that's what all of this is down to the micro level. I don't know.
You mentioned
Maybe there is
mushrooms. I
a
thought we
mystery to
were.
God. What's that? The mustard seed?
No, you mentioned mushrooms. I thought you were going in a different direction there. Oh yeah, baby.
That's what I was thinking too.
So in terms of like evil and light and dark, it's duality, right? So duality exists in our level of existing, right? In our realities. But pure divinity, there are no dualities, right? So it's beyond duality, right? So here, when we have duality, when you're born as a human being, yes, there's going to be negative stuff, positive stuff. There's going to be evil, whatever you want to call it. It's going to be all that. It's like a it's like a whole that's the nature of this level of existing. Is the ups and downs, the dark and light, it and both have to be there because that's the nature of this level of existing. And so if you want the world to be 100% positive, it's never going to be. It's never going to be. And if you want and same with being 100% negative, it's never going to be. It's just the constant this and that. And so when it comes to forgiveness, when you talk about forgiving someone like Epstein or whatever. And this might sound provocative or like fighting words, but who are you to forgive?
Well, is it forgiving? Like, I don't think you have power over that soul. I think it's more like find a place within yourself to still love that person, despite what they've done. You know, it's more of an attuning of self to the possibility of being accepting on a soul, maybe just a soul level alone, that the spirit can be forgiven, even though the individual maybe cannot. It's something higher within yourself that I think you're trying to attune to the finding of love for that, even that person, you know, despite what they've done in a life.
Yeah, forgiveness benefits the one doing the forgiving. In that definition of forgiveness, and the opening of the heart, to me, is the same thing as forgiveness when there was a blockage of the heart to seeing someone else as me, or an extension of me, or a reflection, or you know, a mirror image that is useful for me to work from as a source of teaching. And I can become more open-hearted as I appreciate the fact that there is a lot of dark stuff, but I can still see that we're working together. We can hold hands together to try to ascend in making this world a better place. Once we can shine more light on the dark corners and give people support when they need it, when they're in dark places, without, you know, without enhancing the darkness through, but this is, that's the weird thing. Setting boundaries is like, there's even a lot of one passage about how there are beings who are higher density consciousnesses who they know that their job is to love, and that, but they say that there's a depletion of their ability to love through a failure to accept that which is given from the other side, the dark side. The dark side is depleted through a failure to manipulate. The positive side is depleted through a failure to accept that which is given, with that which is given being a desire to enslave. The path of enslavement is not what these beings want to see for humanity. They want to see us liberated from enslavement, so they cannot be fully accepting and forgiving of the dark forces that want to control humanity, although perhaps they can still find a way to be open-hearted and loving. But there's still got to be some blockedness to seeing yourself as one with that which is only wanting to enslave.
Well, Mike, like the Law of One says, it's like not all the fruit's going to make it to the harvest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, there's just going to be some fruit that can't be allowed in.
But
you know what I mean? And I don't think there's anything that we can do to ripen that or bring that fruit back from wherever it's going to be, where, you know, when the harvest does happen. But I do believe that there is going to be a tipping of the scales of the boat or whatever, the rocking of this society, this planet, you know, that there will be a judgment, you know, there will be a gathering or an event or something coming. I mean, all religions even point to that, or most religions point to something of that nature happening, you know, and history even, you know, look at all the ancient peoples all of a sudden wiped out, dinosaurs wiped out. Like, it might just be this planet, you know, this planet. I don't know. But
we got to remember a very important thing that we can see in everyday life. I see it on Twitter X all the time. I see it with people in general, which was a word that you used, Chris, in your comments. The word duality. Now, if you guys want to explore this a bit more and pontificate, I got some tasty little nuggets.
All right, go ahead.
With that idea. So, duality is like a black or white type of thing. And obviously you got the gray areas and all that kind of stuff, right? I can't tell you how many times I see people
It's not
online.
Just duality though, is it? Like, you made a great point. I don't even think you don't even realize like the fact that you know, it's not just duality, right? Is there's a lot of gray area. And like, I think that's even with yourself, like, right? So like, you have the masculine and you have the feminine in you. You are a duality, but you know, the full picture is that it's up to you to decide how many of those seasonings exist in the one.
But
you know, it's,
but let me finish the idea, so then you can get the whole zip file and see if it actually unzips for you, because I do have a basic conclusion. I'll try to do it as quickly as possible.
Go for it.
So, I can't like when I see people online, for example, there's biblical debates. And by the way, I think debates are like a huge fallacy, my personal opinion. People are making what I like to call knowledge claims. I know, therefore I'm right. And then somebody else says, no, you're wrong because I know, therefore I'm right. So, duality, I'm looking at it from two. So, two, duality is a type of two-dimensionality. You got two parents, male and female. Think of that as a two-dimensional type of construct. But then they hook up. And then from two, they get three. The child is the offspring of both of these, the male and female. It's not completely the male, it's not completely the female. It's a mix between both genetics, right? So, for example, the child does not return to the parents and become some kind of homogeneous oneness thing, right? The child is a child because they are born as a child to
Right, we don't eat
express
our parents.
themselves as a child, right? So if we're in a dualistic reality, then that means there's that contrast that I know, you know, I'm right, you're wrong.
Good and
But if you
evil.
have a third aspect, I'm almost there. If you have a third aspect, that is instead of a duality, I think I'm making up a new word right now, but it would be a triality, meaning there has to be a third point in order for further growth, for further expansion. And it also enables you to solve paradoxes. Did any of that make sense?
Yeah, it's almost like the dimension of time is the new dimensionality to the exploration of archetypal existences. If there's archetypal expressions that you want to see, what could this what how could we understand the creator as one entity with these separate concepts? Well, then you go explore, you go play with these separate concepts in a mixed bag, and you have people who have limited awareness such that they would not know how to identify darkness from light in certain circumstances. And so there's the archetype of the moonlight, where you're looking in a dim light where you can't quite see, you can stumble. They say missteps in the night are oh so easy. You can easily trip over something, not understanding what you're walking into. And that's part of the joy of discovering oneness, and in the context of the gray space. And eventually, ideally, we would learn from this enough to see in terms of pure light again.
I was going to actually mention that when I use the word duality, I think what I really mean is multiplicity, like, or n not one. That's literally what I mean by
Anything
duality,
other
because
than one?
it could be two, three, a million, all of them. It's actually all of them, right? Infinite dimensions, infinite perspectives, in everything's infinite, right? But it when we say duality, it just means it just separates the creation from the creator.
Yeah.
But what connects the creation to the creator?
I think our strings, like when they break down an atom and they found that we have vibrating strings that are making up atoms when they split the atom. This is where string theory kind of came from, right? I think that there's some strings that are in there that are ours, and there are some that are influenced from other beings, and maybe even down to the God level, I don't know. I mean,
Maybe
there's
the strings are
the
love. Maybe
what's
the
that?
strings are maybe the strings are all like our heart strings. They'll back to love.
But
Well, that's
there
what.
is, there is an intermediary somewhere in order to make that distinction between the creator and the created. There's something because we're experiencing this. Whatever this is, we're experiencing it.
Right, that saying, we experience ourselves subconsciously. Who was that? It was one of those. It's in the Tool album too. It's like when all life figures out that you can experience yourself subconsciously. It's like when
subjectively,
you step outside,
yeah.
Subjectively, yeah. It's like
That's
you
the
step outside
comedian.
yourself, right?
Yeah, I can bring that up. What was I going to say though?
That John, that was an amazing little nugget you gave me.
Yes.
Yeah, like you can step outside of yourself, you know what I mean? Subconsciously,
oh,
or, you know.
So, sorry, the creator created creation. And this is, I think this is what Hinduism believes. And I think probably other traditions as well. The creator creates something. And that's it. It's created. So here's creation. And the creator is separate now. The only thing the creator gives is that energy, the life energy, right? The
spark.
That spark of life.
You get one string. You got of all your atoms, you have one string in you that's God. That's from God.
One string?
Yeah, like if string theory is real and our atoms are made up of millions of vibrating strings, each individual person might have one string in their whole entire body of trezillions of strings, one string from the creator.
Maybe
That's
we could
what
just
gives you
say
that spark of life.
Frequency. Would frequency be a good term?
It's yeah, that one string sets the whole frequency and tone of the whole symphony that is you.
Yeah,
but the
the
interpretation of
Hindus
one
call it
string is up to you, right? I mean, it's like you're given a musical instrument from God, and it's one of your strings and one of your atoms, and it stays at the core of you, and maybe it's in your chest. I don't know, right? But that one string that's hidden in one atom of your body with millions of other strings in that atom, that one tiny string might be from the creator, who at the time of creating the universe might have burst into a gazillion strings himself or itself. And that spread throughout the galaxy, birthing nebulas and universes and everything else, and all of us, you know, and everything. And it just gets recycled and comes back and forth, but it's all a part of the creator. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. By the way, from what I understood about string theory is it's a bunch of hogwash. That's what I've always.
Or it could be that. It could be
well,
that.
But and again, it does that. That doesn't. That's neither here nor there in this conversation. I was just mentioning that.
Yeah.
But that spark is in Hinduism is called the Atman. The Atman is the spark of divinity that comes through your heart, and it's not a physical thing either. It's the spark of divinity that gives you life. It allows you to be alive. That's your Atman. And when you die, it goes, you know, it separates from this physical being. Yeah.
But one other important question I want to ask, so then we can figure out what the creator is. Do you view the creator as a parent?
No. Source. I would consider the creator a source.
How about you guys?
I don't think there's any way to know. I mean, I think, again, in the Hindu tradition, I think it's Lord Vishnu is laying back, taking a nap, and from his belly button, there's like some sort of umbilical that creates this dream, and his dream is literally our reality.
Like a tree comes out of his umbilical cord.
Again,
how about you, Mike?
I'm picturing this.
Since becoming a father, I have had experiences that have been very profound with the relationship to the Father in heaven, and it certainly makes sense to me that to want to have an experience is kind of like the heart of creation, wanting to have an experience. And my relationship to my son is such pure love that I can see how in that love I want him to have a kind of experience. I want an experience to be had, and I want that to happen through this individual who I see, who I'm looking over. I'm watching over the potentials of experience that can be had, and I'm guiding and I'm shaping a potential for a universe that is his little world. And I can see how there would be a desire from the view of the galaxy, the logos, to have a particular experience of the star systems, of the planets, of the individuals on the planets, out of love. And there's a choice. There's a choice to have breaking off from the infinite nature of God
into the potentials of finite experience, to know the self, to accept the self, to perceive what is possible, to perceive and explore and play in these dimensions, just like a video game. I don't deny my son from playing video games. The same reason maybe God doesn't deny us from having lifetimes where we even can seek out violence if that's what we're seeking.
Can we at least, though, agree on some level that something came out of the Creator?
I
You know,
think.
even the Big Bang. I mean, even if you're a science-only kind of person, the Big Bang is, where science is kind of taking it. And even that concept in and of itself is the same kind of thing. It's like something all of a sudden came into existence out of nothing. You know, whether it was an umbilical cord from, a sleeping being, or, a bursting of an actual being into bazillions of pieces, or, just some random thing, the universe just all of a sudden came into being from a speck of nothing when nothing existed, or whatever the Big Bang, exactly says. It's like something happened. This is all here. We're here. We're experiencing this, right? You're looking at So,
yourself. You're in a vehicle. It's a body. And it's like something powering it. We don't know,
basically, when a child comes out of a mother, it's something is coming out of a creative process,
Of course.
meaning now that is a child of the creator's. Does that make sense?
Yeah, the
Yeah.
creation is extended. Yeah.
Yeah. So now
As
when I
above, so
look at
below.
that, like what Mike was talking about just like a minute ago. So if creation comes out of the creator and we are divisions of that creator, so we are part of the family of the creator, that we could be considered children. And that when the Creator looks at us, he looks at us kind of like Mike looks at his son. Like, oh, wow, I love that kid.
Like, damn, I did that. Like a piece of me right there. Look at that. A piece of me broke off.
I would agree with that, but I think the only thing the Creator is still giving his children, it's not. I don't think the creator's sitting there drinking iced tea saying, wow, look at this thing I made. This is awesome. Hey, little Joey got a new toy. Good for him. And Sally got a better job. And I don't think that's happening. I think it's, and I know you guys don't believe all those things I just said, but it's an energetic thing that the creator is giving. Because there's something giving us energy, right? There's something giving you energy right now. To be able to sit here and
Coffee.
keep your eyes open and to talk and to laugh and to cry. So, anyway, yeah.
Yeah. What is actually happening in the present moment? This present moment contains the entire universe, always unfolding in new infinite ways that we were perceiving tiny slices of, but the magnificence is still infinite of this creation. Of course, we can only speculate of whether the universe is infinite or finite, but as from our vantage point, it certainly looks like the sun has infinite energy. It looks like the sun is teaching us about the infinite love of God every day, if we can acknowledge that intensity of light and love that is providing nutrients for all plants all the time. Like that's You could call that a father energy. That's insane how the sun can provide that much light and energy for us all the time, and we just kind of like forget it. We forget about it.
Take it for granted, you mean?
Yeah.
See, the other concept here is the whole simulation theory, which I think we talked about on one of our other episodes,
Yeah, we've definitely mentioned it. We're in a video game.
The fact
You gotta take 8 hours off. Your mom or dad says you gotta take 8 hours off.
I mean just the fact that, look, you don't know. I don't know. Is there really some God who's laying down and creation came out of his belly button? Or are we existing on the back of a tortoise? Or what happened? Or Big Bang? Or are we just literally a computer program?
Or all those things. It's all those things.
It could be all. That's either way, we don't know.
That's the theme of this video game. As soon as we, because, well, okay, so you brought up something, and they said that the reason why this has been like a declassified thing they're saying now is that the reason why people can't interface with like a spaceship that can take you to Mars in 8 hours is because there's a temporal displacement because of time. You know what I mean? It's like the fact that you're actually removing yourself from time, and you're into like a little pocket dimension or whatever the technology is. There's a displacement that happens with human beings, like where we're not attuned to that yet. And they're saying that's why the technology is dangerous. They can't just hand it over because it has to do with time. And you know, it's like the whole idea of like there being a past or a present might just be our perception of it, and that all of time is only now forever. There is no past, there is no future. It's all happening all at once. But just the way we're experiencing it, you know, like in a straight line, is a symptom of that, is us thinking that there's, you know, a past and a present, and that's it. It's just a linear thing. But time, like the existence of itself, is actually all time all at once. You know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah,
like 24 hours on the planet is only, you know, dependent on the sun and the earth's rotational, you know, its positional rotational situation. So as soon as you leave that orbit of that existence, you know what I mean? The 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year thing no longer applies. There's only one moment all the time. I don't know. I mean, it might be something.
Well, even that description, though, it can be considered paradoxical. Because when you say now, or the moment, or the present moment, we're putting into a tight little box, right? Like, it's the wording,
bubble,
how we
bubble.
Use language. It's bubble. How we use language today. Like, we try to encapsulate a large concept into something that can be paradoxical. Because
something that we
obviously
can
there's right? Obviously there's something like what we call the past, or something what we call the future. But the thing is, we can't really prove it. We got evidence for the past because I got this. Somebody made this sometime in what we call the past, but it's been presently transported, created throughout the whole thing. So it can be thought of as paradoxical. But if we kind of modify our language where it's not so absolute, I call the present moment now whatever. I call it whatever this is. Because it doesn't give a definition, but it's something that's confirmable objectively by everyone. But at the same time, you don't put it into a nice little box. I love Eckhart Tolle. The power of now is great. But now, the word now is limited in of itself. Because when I think, oh, the now, I already have a picture in my head that's confined in some kind of boundary. But when I say whatever this is, it's true.
Yeah, what is
but
that?
It's not definable.
Yeah. And just for everyone watching, in terms of whatever this is Mike in the meat suits, and that is our name, and that's
I'm gonna take mine off now.
That's it.
Ooh, me too. Ah,
the first reptilian invasion. Ah, they're real.
Okay, wow. I want to take this back full circle a little bit.
Go viral immediately if I could do that.
Okay, so we have a lot of people today who are focused completely on the past and seeing themselves as victims of all the things that has led up to the present moment, and they don't believe that they have freedom to recreate their reality, that the future is the result of the past. And it's not the result of infinite potential in the present. They don't see God working with infinite power in the present through them, certainly. They don't see that there's an ability to reshape our reality with love. They're stuck in an identity that's been crafted based on patterns that are stuck on repeat. And so there's got to be a way that we can turn the key and go from saying, this present moment, I'm the victim of this present moment. This is this terrible thing that's happened to me, this universe that I found myself in, to saying this universe is happening for me. This is something that's great, that I have infinite opportunities, infinite challenges that I can work through, that I wanted to work through, like a video game. I can level up. I just got to figure out how to play this game, how to level up. And I feel like, the heart of the secret is always love, and love is the energy. Love is the thing that binds us to the infinite, that connects the finite to the infinite through that energetic potential that we can pull from, and it's outside of time, and yet we're pulling it into time through the present.
You know how advanced all those thoughts and ideas are? Those are, I was just talking to my wife this morning about that because I told her we were going to be doing Mike and the Meat Suits. And I told her, I read her some of the topics. And I just told her, I was like, look, the thing is, I asked her, what percentage of people do you really think are even capable of thinking thoughts like that? Even just thinking the thought, not even believing it, just entertaining it. Just having that idea flash across their mind or come out of their mouth, it's got to be less than 10% of people.
Well,
What
we
do
know
you
for a
guys
fact
think?
now, we know for a fact now the exact percentage, because we learn a lot of things about people as giant crises happen. I mean, a lot of people are not as smart as I would have hoped.
Are we
I'd say
victims?
80 plus percent are kind of sheeple, sheep, sheeple.
Are we victims of a world where there's a bunch of dumb people who can't figure it out, or are we bringing the light all the time? And how do we activate this awareness of liberation? How do we find liberation when we're faced with images of war? War is the theme we're in today, because Iran is now this thing that everyone's having to debate. And like, why? Is this liberation?
I think one of the primary suspects, because we were talking about what people think, one of the primary suspects is a dysfunctional thought process. The thought process is not functioning the way it should be functioning as created. We give
Defective. You're
too much,
defective. Send it back.
we give, wait, we give too much workload to the thought process. We have plenty of other tools in our bodies that can take on other processes, but the thought process is not qualified to be able to figure out these other things. The thought process in general is 1 plus 1 equals 2. It's a measurement tool. So, this is why the thoughts about the past, which is slippery, usually reoccur sometime in the future because that thought process has not been resolved. The thought process itself needs resolution and functionality because that's what it does. And the thing is, it's out of harmony with the rest of our body because the thought process is trying to figure everything out. Hence, knowledge claims.
And the need
Hence
for
what?
meditation.
What'd you say? Hence what?
Knowledge claiming. Like I was talking about earlier, about
Okay.
people claiming knowledge about something.
As
The one
fact,
thing
and then
that,
like,
the
I'm
one
right,
thing,
you're wrong kind of thing.
yeah, the one thing that I'm like, I'm pretty confident to be objective about is the thought process is most likely dysfunctional.
Yeah, and Mike, you mentioned meditation. This is literally everything you're saying, John, is the reason for meditation. Our mental processes have been muddied, overwhelmed, head trash. You know, I'm actually I'm gonna I'm going to write another nonfiction self-help book, hopefully over the next year or two. And it's going to be called Head Trash Removal. Because that is literally the one thing in the world that everybody could benefit from. And
this is what I'm trying to get at, though. This is the important part. Because in general, most spiritual practices say the mind, just let go of the mind, ignore it. Let go of the thought, basically saying let go of the thought process, ignore it. It's kind of like me saying, take out my heart because I don't need it for my body to function. The thought process is there for a reason. When it's functional, because the main reason for meditation, as far as I know, because I've done many meditations, is to get into that no mind space.
Go nowhere.
To be able to
go nowhere immediately. Like, let's say you're 11 years old standing in the school lunch line, and like everything's chaos around you, spitballs are flying. You know, let's just say the lunch lady has three fingers, right? And you're in that line, it's chaotic. You just want your lunch, you want to sit down and relax. But like, you got to be able to, even in that moment, as a kid with all your hormones flaring, you should be able to go nowhere. Like, just find that inner place where you could just be quiet and find your peace, and just, you know, no one can get you there. Wherever that place is in your mind, where, like, you know, like Shawshank Redemption, like, they can't get me because I'm in here. You got to be able to go to that place, and in that place, there should be nothing.
But what I'm saying, close to that, close to what you're saying, what I'm saying is that we usually go into meditation because we need to be in that no thought zone. But because our thoughts are not resolved. But imagine all your thoughts are resolved. What do you do in between each thought? You just naturally go into the state of what Zen. We call no mind.
Zen, right? Yeah.
Naturally, without needing to do a practice like meditation. You just naturally flow into it because the mind is now a tool instead of it using you as a fool.
Have you ever like thought you were relaxed and then realized, oh shit, there's even another level, and you find that and you're like, oh yeah. Like, let's say you're in the bath or the shower and you know, the water's hot and warm and you're hitting your spot, and then you crank it up just like a quarter of a turn more and you're like, oh shit.
That's too hot.
No, it's like that. Yeah. But you're there. You know what I mean? You're like, is it too hot or is this, you know what I mean?
Is peace something that can be appreciated on a deeper and deeper and deeper level then? Is this what meditation is going deeper and deeper and deeper into the peace that does not require any outcome, any particular event, any particular thought to go one way or the other, although we can just watch the thought go without losing our peace. We can let the thought go whichever direction it wants to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard someone say once, it's like, you know, living life is like holding a net, like a handheld net in a stream. And it's like 99% of everything should go through you, you know, effortlessly. But occasionally something's going to get caught in that net, and it's up to you to decide whether you want to keep it in there or not.
But why do we have so much, what's it called? Like a binary thought process, good or bad?
Well, you have two hemispheres of the brain.
Wait, right or wrong?
Like emotional charges, it's emotions.
But we live there, correct? In general?
Yeah, it's the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil.
So, but the thing is though now, so embedded in that binary thought system is, what's it called? Is our paradoxes. That's where paradox, at least from my view, that's where paradoxes live. So, how do you resolve a paradox? You bring in the third thing. The third resolves the paradox.
Or
so I would
together.
Say,
yeah, like a strand of DNA, right? I mean,
yeah,
there's three parts to a DNA strand. There's left, there's right, but then there's all those racks in the middle.
Yeah. So I would say it would, instead of binary, it would be trinary. for resolution. For example, do you guys want to try to resolve a paradox?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. All right. All right. This is basically a paradox. I know that I know nothing.
That's not true. Don't talk down to yourself like that.
Oh, thanks, man. I needed to hear that.
Right.
Yes, paradox. Yes.
Yes.
I know that I know nothing. How is that paradoxical?
Because you know a lot of things. But in the grand scheme of things, you know nothing, Jon Snow.
No, technically speaking, it's because you're saying I know. So you're claiming that you know something, but then the thing you're claiming you know is that you know nothing, which contradicts your initial claim, right?
But they could both be true,
Okay.
which makes neither of them
But
true.
how do we resolve that paradox in one sentence?
Peace.
What was that?
Peace. We just step back from it. Let it be the movie on the screen.
You could remove yourself from the equation completely. Step back, which is what Mike
Or
just
you
said.
could just enjoy the mystery.
Enjoy it. Just sit
But
back with hands in the air. Don't even press
but
the
wait.
safety belt down.
But those are like personal preferences. But I'm saying something that can actually, if everybody hears it and sees it and reads it, it's like, oh, it makes sense without me needing to explain why it's paradoxical or why it's not paradoxical. Would you like to hear my upgrade?
Nope.
All
Go
right.
ahead.
Yes.
Okay. I know that I know almost nothing.
Yep.
Meat suits.
So, to resolve any paradox, you just have to add the word almost.
Or
I guess it
meat
depends
suit.
on the paradox,
Or meat
what
suit.
language you would choose to use, but that's my third. That's the, instead of it being dualistic, I make it, I guess the
Trialistic.
lack of a better word, trialistic,
Trialistic.
I would say
you
the
know?
creator provides all the room we have for exploration of paradoxes, and that's essentially the universe is just resolving the paradoxes, exploring that which is not, that which is
Yeah, and
illusion.
what if John, what if the whole 2 to 3 thing is just us becoming going from a two-dimensional thing to a three-dimensional thing, and then we find out it's a whole fucking ladder, and then we ride up it until we get to, like, let's just say 7, and then we realize there are other octaves.
But again, those are numbers. They're all just
No, I'm
numbers,
just saying, like, well, numbers
right?
exist for a reason because, if there's 0, there's nothing, which is Zen, right? But if there's 1, then there's just a fart, a whisper of something. But if there's 2, then it becomes, it's on its way. And then the third dimension is where you become a fucking thing. You know what I mean? And
There
once
is.
you're an independent thing, once you're born from a duality into a triality, that now you're on your way up. So what naturally will come next in a billion years is those threes are going to realize there's a four, and then the fours are going to quickly realize there's a five, a six, and a seven. Then boom, and then you hit different octaves.
But it's really that these are colors of a white light spectrum. We're exploring a spectrum of unity when we explore individual numbers or individual colors of the creator. But I do want to hear Chris talk more about meditation and your views on stepping back and resolving the things in the mind, because you've often said that the trick to meditation has to do with sort of ignoring your thoughts, but not getting caught up, not being actively engaged in them, allowing yourself to process it. Well, I want you to put it in your words. How do you meditate?
Yeah, so to follow up on what you were saying, John, about how people's minds are just kind of going haywire, create way too many thoughts, lots of head trash, different all kinds of weird self-conscious things and all this. So the mind is a tool, basically, right? It's a faculty we have. It's kind of like a hand, okay? You can use your hand in a lot of different ways, okay? But the mind is its own thing, and it's obviously beyond the physical. And so what happens is no one really pays attention to their mind. No one realizes that, hey, my mind is an organ which I need to take care of. Okay. So meditation, the only reason for meditation is to learn how to bring your mind, is to focus your mind on one thing. That's literally the definition of meditation. Try to focus on one thing. And of course, when you try to meditate, your mind goes everywhere. And that's because there's a lot of momentum. All the haywire thoughts and craziness, there's so much momentum that you might sit down in a chair to meditate, but your mind is, it's like trying to stop a cruise ship. It's going to take, 13 miles to stop this ship. It's not just going to stop on a dime, right? So meditate. That's why people quit meditation, because the first time they sit down, they're like, "Oh my God, this is overwhelming." You just have to get through that, and the way you get through that is in meditation is you just ignore your thoughts. It's a practice of ignoring thoughts. It's not trying to push them away. It's not trying to cry about your thoughts. It's not trying to say, "Oh, I'm a victim, all these thoughts." None of that crap. You have a thought? No big deal. It's fine. Just let it drift away. Don't give it any energy. Don't try to push it away either. Just you're passive. You're absolutely passive. You're not doing anything. You're just sitting there. It's like you're waiting for something, and really you're waiting for divinity or God. And what happens is the more you ignore your thoughts, they'll drift away. And then you'll have another thought, and it'll drift away, and it'll have another thought, it'll drift away. Pretty soon, all that momentum, the craziness momentum in your head, it gets dissipated. And over a period of weeks and definitely months, the activity level of your mind will be brought down to a normal level. And yeah.
I want to share something, because this is what John has said and what Chris has said is, I feel like it's slightly different angles on the word thoughts and ignoring thoughts. And I feel like this is actually exactly what my wife gets after me about. She's like, "You're claiming you're meditating, Mike, but I think you're coming back with a lot of thoughts. I think you were out there, you're on the mountain thinking a lot." But then this is the question I have is, to what degree is meditation a process of listening, so that our conscious mind is not the one needing to resolve the thoughts, but there is some deeper part of ourselves that's putting in the puzzle pieces, which explains why you can let that thought go. You can let it's and it's from a state of peace that we let thoughts go, more than the state of worry and busyness that we have to add on more of the world's understanding of concepts, as opposed to allowing love and forgiveness to sort of like an ocean just washing over the thoughts. Like, yes, this is the way it is. This is what we can accept.
Solutions will come. That's the beauty of meditation. You might be struggling with something at work. I know, Mike, you're a programmer and stuff, and you might have a problem with some program you're working on. You don't really know how to fix it, and there's a problem, and you're like, what do I do? Do I need this tool, that tool? I don't know. You go to sleep, you wake up the next day, and you meditate, and in your meditation, you'll get the answer. Solutions come very often, and here's why. Because when you clear up that head trash, you're a more pure human being. Whatever's in your heart is going to come through, and you're going to be able to hear your own heart. And the heart is the center of the human being. It's not the mind. The mind is a tool. The heart is our connection to divinity. The heart is whatever spiritual things you can do. It all comes from the heart. So basically, when you meditate and you clear out your mind, you will get solutions, and you will feel more peace. And real quick, the other aspect of the meditation practice that we teach is something called cleaning, where you actually let go of all the head trash and all the samskara you've accumulated that day. So every day, when your day's work is over, you sit down for 20, 25 minutes, and it's not meditation. You're using an act of will. You're saying, but you close your eyes and you sit like you're meditating. But you say, okay, all my days, samskaras and impurities are leaving me out the back. And in its place, the sacred current of the divine is filling that space in my heart. And you actually consciously let go of, and you don't do specific things like, oh, that lady that pissed me off in traffic, I'm going to clean her out. No, nothing specific, only general, everything, good, bad, ugly, all of it is gone. And then that wipes, helps wipe the slate clean too. And so the more your slate is wiped clean, the more your mind is operating at a normal level instead of this crazy level, then that's like the natural state of a human being, I would say. And you're going to get a lot of insight and solutions from the divine.
So let's say
you could find
that zero, that zero spot, right? And you could hold it all day, all night. It's not a problem. Would you live forever as, you know, I mean, would it slow down your aging? Would there be some beneficial consequence to actually living in this state all the time? Would you unlock Jesus powers?
No, because it's not, you're not meant as a human being to be thoughtless. Your mind serves a function and you need to have thoughts.
The whole thought thing, when you said like thoughts are going to come, it's like, don't even think, you know, just kind of like, just let them come and then just let them go. That's kind of the summary of what I think you're
ignore them. Yes.
Because they're going to come. Let them come, but let them go. And like, if you get good at that, they'll kind of stop. You'll stop hearing them come. You know what I mean? Just be like, and you turn the volume down to where, you know, you have control over it. Then once you're in that zero point energy, you know, from there, what's the goal?
The goal is to be a normal human being and not hamstrung by your head trash. The goal is what you said, John. You need to be in control of your mind instead of your mind being in control of you. That's the goal.
But this is the important thing, though. Is say you become a master meditator, but the thought process is still not at peak efficiency. There's still past and future tense within our minds. Because that's the way in general how people think, in past and future tense. So there's a lot of energy leaking already in the thought process. So if you're like, imagine the thought process, the past and future tense is like two circuits, like energy coming out and they're not connected, right? Like circuits of energy just... So I'm meditating in front of these unclosed circuits. So, but I can be at peace with the crazy circuitry, the crazy energy, which is completely fine. That's beautiful. But is there some book or teaching or anything out there that shows how to resolve your thoughts where they're not leaking energy, they're actually a function and they work the way they should work without it being the culprit of my demise? And this is why I need to meditate.
I love that.
Well, yeah. And you're sort of zooming into the mind and the nature of the thoughts. Like you said, thoughts about past, thoughts about present. So what I was talking about before is learning how to just exhaust the mind. Like, so it's not, it doesn't have 1,000 thoughts. It only has 10.
Turn the volume down.
Well, and now you're talking about going in and sort of choosing thoughts. Like, should I think about the past? Should I think about
just
the future?
Like I said, the current
not necessarily. Net, you know I mean? I'm saying not choosing thoughts. We're not choosing thoughts.
Okay.
Resolving them. So just like I said with the I know that I know nothing resolved the thought, the paradox, I know that I know almost nothing is a resolution because it's true, but yet I don't need to pontificate anything more because it has all the information within that completed thought. So there's no circuitry like spitting out stuff. So if the only thought I had in my mind, for example, getting to Chris's, Randy's point, is So if imagine the only thought I had was that one complete thought, and that thought would pop up every once in a while, but it's a complete thought. It's not leaking energy. When I'm not focusing on that completed resolved thought, I automatically go into the meditative state without trying to meditate.
This is actually roughly connected to the session five law of one material about what they call the balancing exercises, but they frame it all around how every thought has an antithesis. Every thought will have an emotional charge, positive or negative. And as you appreciate that there are things you're kind of attached to, you're holding on to, and you or that you'd prefer not exist in your reality, or that you're holding on to. You can look for something that has the opposite charge. You can see that there is a time for patience, there is a time for impatience, and patience, impatience is the two sides of one coin. It is the balancing of the wise use of our time, you could say. When we're too patient, when I'm too patient with my son, nothing gets done in our life. When I'm impatient with him, I can be holding on
Nothing
to
gets
too
done in your
much.
life.
Yeah. So there's a balance to be found that allows the mind to become less and less attached to these thoughts. And that I think that's what we're talking about on some level.
Yeah, I
But if
picture
I
it like
disregard
you're.
something or someone, say I disregard one of you guys, and then you might feel like, oh man, right? So, if we disregard, including the thought process, if we disregard whatever, then that means the attention is removed from that. And attention, I'm thinking
Attention,
the
attention,
attention, the like
attention, attention.
yes, but the attention, its seed is love. And when you remove that idea of love, coming even more full circle to our original idea is where does evil come from? The lack of love, the lack of
Bingo.
love and attention because I'm ignoring you.
Bingo. Nailed it.
So I just want to clarify one thing, John, when you were talking about the types of thoughts you have and those two things you were talking about. Here's an analogy. If your diet is horrible, you're eating all the worst foods, nasty stuff. You're going to get sick and you're not going to be healthy, right? Just say
Yeah,
yes.
sure.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah,
Now,
yes.
if you change your diet and you eat all good things, okay, you
You still
start
die
eating all good
tomorrow.
things. You start eating all good things and even working out and stuff. How do you know your body's going to get healthy? How do
Well,
you know
first
that's
one,
going to do any good?
you got to flush out all the mind shit and your body shit too.
Here's my point. When you do the right thing, your body and your being will take care of it. So when you meditate properly, you don't have to worry about, am I thinking this thought or that thought? You literally don't have to think about anything.
It's
Let the
done.
process happen and
It's
it will
done. It's
happen
already
and it
done.
works.
It's already done. Yeah.
No, I'm not saying that meditation doesn't work. I'm a huge advocate of meditation, first of all.
Sure, I know.
Huge, right? So, but the thing is, though, now is I look at it in a way of how do we upgrade our consciousness?
So, yeah,
So
once you reach that
it
state,
comes to that,
hold
you
on.
know?
That's my point, is that if you meditate properly and do the cleaning, you are being upgraded by him, the creator and God, whatever. That's
It's
what
like
I'm saying. Yeah.
the seed that receives adequate light, warmth, moisture, nutrients, that it's going to be a bigger, healthier plant.
The
You know what I mean?
harvest.
So putting yourself in that healthy place, you have to be in healthy soil. You know what I mean? And it's like, that's why I picture it like your mental health is going to really dictate everything, even your what you eat and your physical health and all that too. It might even override that. I mean, even if you eat shit, you might be okay if you have good mental health. You know, because that's
Placebo
spiritual
effect.
health. You know what I mean? It's like the best soil. You know, there's tolerances that will be adjusted based on how good the soil is that you're in, you know, your mental state and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's like potatoes, you know, it's like We'll call ourselves the Meta Taters. It's just like
Okay, that's good.
potatoes thinking about potatoes.
Oh my
But you
God.
never eat potatoes raw. Not good for you.
Small doses is okay.
We're the meditators.
So, this is a fun conversation. One thing is like, gosh, a part of me wants to just become full of thoughts of how do I organize people to be an army of activists around the importance of meditation.
Yeah, right. Yeah, if we could get all the radical people that are running in the streets and blowing off pepper bombs and all that shit, whatever's going on, we could just teach those people meditate, just the basics of like just stop. You know what I mean? Go to your safe space is you don't need a a room in a house for that. Your safe space should be in here.
But how do you get people to
You're already there. You're already there. You're born
align with
there.
the how do you
You
get
just have to
people to
remember that you're
align
already
with the
there.
idea? No, but how do you get people to align to the idea of meditation or
You don't.
praying or going to an event or a church or something? How do you do that?
In my,
So
go ahead,
one
John.
thing that I would perhaps say is like utilize your God-given ability to have infinite patience, to be super patient with people, to listen to whatever they're saying, regardless of what kind of spewing they do, because usually they'll answer their own questions if you let them go long enough, and then they resolve something. But then
Yes.
hopefully, as you, as just a infinite patience type of dude, you can perhaps mention, see, didn't you resolve that?
It's
So
like
then
the way you're
it could.
describing it. It sounds like if I was watching someone untangling wires, you know what I mean? I would want them to do it. But like if I saw something that would be an obvious little, oh, what about that one? And then it was like, oh shit, yeah. And then they did that and it like untangled a huge knot. You know what I mean? It's like they have to do it. But yeah, if you're trying to help people reach that untangling point of the wires in their heads or, their spirits, yeah, that'd be incredibly useful. I mean, how would you market that? I don't know. I mean, let's just say one person could get to that ultimate Zen state and live there all day, every day. And that just doesn't mean just sitting down in a cross-legged position for your whole life, not eating. I mean, living and walking and interacting with the world in that state. Then maybe they would have, some kind of a supernatural aura or power about them. Maybe they would evolve to a, holy shit, people are capable of that. And then as soon as that one person, that 13th monkey, found that thing, other monkeys would immediately start going there too. And then you'd have a popping of the popcorn. And once that popcorn's good, not all the kernels are going to pop.
Yeah.
I think that's
You know what I'm saying?
our I think what you just said, Randy, is our actual natural
Potential.
way of being.
It's our
As
natural
in,
potential.
we're not meant to be the way we are now. I believe we are meant to be fully functional human beings, like you just mentioned, as in not necessarily something that eventually we get to. It's something that we naturally have because you need fully functional harmonic beings in order to interact with all the other fully functional harmonic beings in order to continue to be the children of a creator, which means we have the impulse to create. So
It's
how
our
are we going to do that?
primary duty. You know what I mean? That's our one and only primary duty is to create. Like Mike did. He duplicated. Damn it, Mike, you made it. You know what I mean?
So, Randy, by the way, there
Primary function
are.
as a mustard seed, your primary function isn't just to make people's food tasty. Your primary function is to be planted in the ground and grow into a tree and create billions of other mustard seeds. You know what I mean? A mushroom spore, or whatever. Whatever the thing is, its primary duty is to ascend into a way so high of a frequency that it duplicates. Boop, up. There's another me. Holy shit, there might be many me. You know what I mean? I might pollinate a whole forest. I don't know.
Yeah.
Depending on the being, whatever coding is in that being.
I
But
mean, Randy, there's people like that in the world today. There are spiritual masters you can go and follow,
and they spend all their day teaching and meditating and being.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of them.
Except for Deepak Chopra.
I had an experience when I was an older teen, and I had really bad anxiety for years, like puking, cold sweats. I had bad anxiety, and I was taken to see like the monks when they came through at Lilydale. It was the place in New York. I don't know if you're familiar with that, John. Lilydale. It's, you know, where these giant trees are and stuff, and witches or whatever, these, you know, hippie type psychics, all that. They're at Lilydale. And this woman brought me there to see the monks, and the monks passing through town, and they stopped and did a, you know, a demonstration, all kinds of meditating and dancing. And, you know, it was like a really, it was like an hour, hour and a half performance. And afterwards, the lady brought me up to meet the monk because I had suffered through such bad anxiety and stuff. And this monk, because I was convinced I was leaving with him. I was going to go with him. I was, you know, wanted to detach from society. And, you know, it was around 9/11. It was bad. You know, I was doing bad, you know, and all the stuff that happened to me in my childhood and all this weird, you know, I ended up being fucked up. So like the anxiety, I had bad anxiety. I'd be puking and stuff like that ever since I was a little kid. And I got in front of this monk and he grabbed me by the wrist and he pushed his thumb like right into my wrist. And he held it there like he was reading my pulse. And he just looked into like my heart chakra like area. And, you know, he wasn't looking at me. He was looking at a part of me that was, you know, my energy me. And he did adjust me. And like since that interaction with that guy, I like that next day, like my vibrational whole, I did the like you said, like mind trash, like clear it out and like physical trash, clear it out. Like he kind of like reprogrammed my grid there. With that one, he held my wrist for about 40, 50 seconds. And he, you know, she told him that I wanted to go with him. And after he let go, and he gave me his beads off his neck and he gave him, you know, to me, I still have them hanging from my rear view window in my car. But like that interaction of like a minute and a half, that, what do you say, ascended master or whatever? He did. He aligned my grid. He realigned my grid. And my anxiety just started going away naturally. You know, I didn't have to do anything else. It was like he just brought me to that zero. He like retuned me as an instrument. You know what I mean? And then it was like the music just came. It was like, oh my God, it was so much better.
But you felt compassion from him though, right?
It was, yeah. He like sent something into me through his, you know, what do you want to call him? You know, cigarette lighter?
I would say if we on a soul level are remembering the frequency, all we need is a taste of that frequency, and it's like we're hooked. We want that frequency.
Yeah, it's like tuning. That's why they say they got rid of the bells. Did you ever look into that rabbit hole? Well, they said they got rid of all the big natural metal bells from churches and everything else that used to ring. They said because that would naturally realign people and reattune them every day when you heard them. Mm. And that, well, the weird place that theory goes is it says that there are evil, you know, spirits within people. And that those evil spirits that are within the souls of people, of humans walking among us, really hated that because it kind of cast them out of those physical bodies that they were inhabiting. So like, let's just say, you know, a demonic possession or something like that of a demon or a reptilian spirit or whatever evil place this thing come from, you know, it might be residing in a person. And by hearing that bell, it reattuned the soul of that person in a way that it became no longer inhabitable to evil spirits and stuff. And that's why bells be on churches. And they got rid of all the bells. If you notice, there's not many actual bells that ring every day anymore in cities and towns and, you know, stuff like that. And it's like, maybe evil is an actual thing too. You know, maybe it does manifest into a you know, or maybe it can only take, you know, residence within something that is alive. I don't know. But, you know, it's all about that reattuning of, you know, there's something more than your physical self and your mental self. There's an actual grid, you know, and you are a musical instrument. You know what I mean? It's like you have multiple notes and like a sympathy that you can create through yourself. You are an instrument, you know what I mean? And that instrument needs to be attuned every once in a while. You need to take care of your instrument and retune it at the end of each day or week, or, you know, you need that reset. So
I think that evil is primarily unresolved. The word is trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Because broken beings want mm-hmm. to have some kind of reconnection to the fullness of whatever potential that they forgot about. So hurt people, hurt people. So, like those beings, the evil ones, I believe are deeply traumatized. So they want to be able to exert their anger, their lusts, their passions, or whatever onto other beings, because the famous word is, or sentence is misery loves company, type of thing, right? With not resolving the trauma. There's something called even the early church fathers, the Christian church fathers, were considering this. It's not dogma, but they were considering something called apokatastasis, meaning everything, even the devil, he eventually reconnects with God and everything becomes whole again, right? So is and even in my religion, the Orthodox Christian worldview, we don't think evil is 100%, because again, like I said earlier, evil is deception. Having 100% deception just cancels itself out, so it can't be 100%. So there's this opening towards, because everything came from the creator, and that creator created an environment where love is like probably
Love
one of
and
the
hate.
biggest thing.
Would it be love and hate? Would there be also be a duality or a triality within that?
No,
Well,
love
hate,
is love.
but hate, it can't really be complete, because there's no antithesis to love, because love doesn't have a boundary, it doesn't have an opposite,
So
right?
if there is a
So
creator
hate would be
and it
just a
has
lack of
love, if the create if we all if everything is from a creator and the creator would be love, would the creator also be hate? Or would hate just be a variation of a distorted love?
Yeah,
It's
hate is a distortion of
probably
love.
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is hate the
Hate is
absence
in
of love?
duality.
Is hate the absence of love?
Most likely, yeah.
No, hate is in duality. Love, there's love with the lowercase L, and there's love with the uppercase L. The uppercase L love, that's God. That's that energy that's feeding your Atman, that's keeping you alive, and that's the energy that created everything. It's a creative energy. There's no opposite to it. It's love, capital L. When you come down to duality, then there's love and hate, but that love is with the lowercase L. Even with your wife or your girlfriend, that's a lowercase L. Does that sound right?
Does the
I
lowercase
usually go
L
with
mature
the
into an uppercase L?
no, that's why you need a middle case L. I'm in the process of creating it. I really am. It's gonna work. I'm
Oh,
gonna get a
John, you're
tattoo
funny,
of it
man.
right here. But I think that the middle case L,
Come on, these
I
kids
think
can't even write
that's
in cursive, man. You want them to
no, but
learn middle case?
it would make sense, because if you're like, if we're talking like a triad type of evolutionary thing, right? Like I would like basically say the universe is a trinity of trinities. Everything is trinity in nature. Even though you have the fourth, because you can have other dimensions and whatever, but there's still you still need the two to create the third. And then that third enables further
Oh, that's the
novelty,
Fibonacci,
further
right? So
creation.
once you hit two, then you need one more to make three. So two go, you know what I mean? Like it's 0 to 1, 1 to 3, 3 to 5. You know what I mean? That is life. That is the creator, or that is the created, the creation, I guess you'd say,
Yeah,
right?
that's how
But
it
you at
least
least
need two.
unfolds. Because even the
You at
heart,
least need
when they take the
two.
heart out of the body, there's a chef that found a way to cut the heart into a way that when he cuts the heart to cook it, you realize that the heart is even a spiraling organ. Like it starts from one point and spirals, even in its fabric.
So, Mike, back to what you were saying about how do we teach people about meditation and how do we get people to care about it? I've been trying for more than 20 years, and I've tried many different things, including teaching meditation, giving open houses about meditation, writing a self-help book,
coaching people for success coaching and, you know, understanding their mind and their mental powers. And I've done a lot of things, and what I learn can be distilled down into a very simple lesson for me, which is no one cares. People don't care. No one's going to change. People only change when they hit rock bottom. And then that allows them, then they, hitting rock bottom is what wakes them up. And they're like, oh my God. And then that is the insight that lets them to start going up. Now, once they start going up and taking control of their life, which is what I did in 2003, my life was an absolute mess. I literally homeless, no car, no job. The only thing I wasn't like a crazy drug addict. That's the only thing.
How old were you? That's a shame. That's a shame.
30, 31. Yeah. By 31, I drove my life, my whole life, drove it into the ground. And that's when I woke up and I was like, this is stupid. Like, I'm better than, like, this is retarded. Like, I'm better than this. What is wrong with me? So then I started meditating and I got my life on track. But I wouldn't have gotten my life on track unless I ran it into the ground. So I think, Mike, I feel you, man. I literally asked my wife. Every other month, I'm thinking about something like, can we do like a retreat for this type of person? And but I'm always thinking 100 thoughts. But in the real world, no one cares. Almost no one cares. And so I'll just finish with this, that in my own life, I've realized that I need to accept that. I need to accept the fact that for the rest of my life, even though I would love to help people, love to help them learn meditation, love to help them zoom out enough to see clearly, I don't know. I mean, I can, like, I'm here now, we're talking about it, and I think this is great. I can do what I can do, but as far as results from my effort, I can't expect anything, and I don't expect anything, actually.
You have to want to change. You know, you don't have to necessarily hit rock. You have to want to change.
And
it's
got
to be real.
This is why I call it an archetype, the dark night of the soul. This is why evil has value. It's pushing people in the direction of wanting to transform their spirit. And the transformation of the spirit is an archetype, I feel, that is the awakening of an awareness of the sense of the infinite, that there is something deeper than the lowercase love, that there is something that draws us into something beyond our limited physical form, back into the present moment, back into the infinite potential, and into the uppercase L, which I do think is possible to merge with gradually. And that's the transition to higher
density. The law of one mentioned this as well. Catalysts. What you had, Chris, was a catalyst. Same with you, Randy, when the monk did the thing. That time period was a catalyzing event for you. Sometimes it's you make a choice to put yourself in that position, but sometimes you do it subconsciously where you don't realize you're putting yourself into a sticky situation, which makes you need a catalyst.
Wherever that happens in your life, wherever you're at when that happens, when you hit that point, it's going to be an event for you. You know what I mean?
Right. I actually think this might be a good place to close out the conversation. This is awesome. It's going on for over an hour. And we could keep on chatting after the recording is ended. And
I have so much to say.
1,000 episodes, Rick.
So much more.
Yeah.
10,000 episodes. 10,000 episodes, Rick.
I love you guys.
Thank you, guys. Indeed. This is beautiful.